world's not as simple as it used to be. It's not enough to be a good guy anymore. We have to be the best. The time has come. All will be accounted for. Or we will hunt them. Stand up. It's time to be the heroes we were always meant to be.
You know what I just realized is on that cover of the Not Brand that there's like a smiley face on Spider-Man. Like parts of the web that are like drawn in darker and it kind of makes a smile.
Yeah, he's got a tattoo with the heart with the triple J in it. So like I heart J. Jonah Jameson, except that's not his name in this one.
I was just focused on Aunt May as his emblem on his chest.
Yep. Oh, jeez. I mean, we're getting into it, so why don't we go ahead and just get started then. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Superhuman Registration Podcast, a podcast where we bury the lead.
Not like, you know, as a rule.
Kind of as a rule. This is the exception in that I think we're actually going to start without having any sort of weird banter up top. We're just going to, like, get right into it.
Are we fridging the lead?
Are we fridging the lead?
Yeah.
I don't know. Which of the male co-hosts' stories is getting progressed by the fridging of the lead?
You, because this is your podcast.
Sweet. This is my podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the LLC. By the way, I made an LLC and signed it over to you.
Wait, you made an LLC no. And you put my name on it?
And yeah, guess totally. Who's going to jail, Steven?
It sounds like I'm getting set up for something.
This is like all those, like, just using Steven to funnel money, and, like, he's got this, like, Bond villain empire running, and he's like, yes, all because of a little comic book podcast.
Wait, where's the money coming from?
Don't worry about it.
From this. Oh.
It's only your name. It's only your name on the LLC.
So my name is Steven, and I'm joined tonight by John and the ever-fraudulent Aldo.
Yo.
Man, that's a rough nickname.
I like ever-fraudulent. It's like ever-mint.
Yeah.
But twisted.
So we're going to talk about some comics now. We're doing another triple threat, another back-issue dive with three single issues. And actually, we're only doing like one single issue and then two parts of issues because we've got another couple of stories that featured in anthology titles. So I think, why don't we go ahead and start with the cover that we were kind of discussing at the beginning. We're going to dive into Not Brand Ech.
Oy. Ech. I just realized that in the title they flipped the N in Not Brand Ech, and that's actually a letter in Russian, so it like triggered a part of my brain. It was like, try to read it, and I'm like, no, it won't work.
So. Oh, okay. The second N.
Yeah, that is an I in Russian, the backwards N. Makes an
that's,
E an,
that's a backwards N. Rush should be crazy, yo.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this mess of a comic was drawn by a very talented person, Marie Severin, who we recently lost. Any criticism of this will not be a criticism of her great work and all that she contributed to comics. I actually watched a really old TV spot about a Pittsburgh Comic-Con, and they were like, what is this? Who likes comic books? And they picked some interesting folks to interview there. But Marie Severin, they talked to her while she was drawing the Hulk, and it was pretty cool. And I think she represented herself in the medium well. But Not Brand Ech, featuring Spidey-Man versus Nat-Man and Rotten, is a parody comic where basically J. Jonah Jameson hires Batman and Robin to take out Spider-Man. It's a mess of a comic. It's just like, yeah. It has so many in-jokes and references. Like, if you weren't, you know, reading every week, I think you'd miss a lot of stuff. But, you know, learning the history of Marvel and going back, you know, we picked up on stuff. I think some of it's funny. Like, the first page, you get a little, like, you know, it's not even graffiti. It's just a note. It's like a note card taped to the wall behind all the characters that says, Bucky lives.
Oh, yeah.
That's fun.
I really like the fact that he has, that they're making fun of the whole Bat family, and this is Defective Comics. And then Nat-Man, Nat-Boy, Nat-Girl, Nat-Cat, Nats to you.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's their way of poking fun at the distinguished competition brand Ek or X. You know, that was a advertising shtick back in the day. That the other guys were brand X. And so this is just a way to parody some of their comics. They break the fourth wall. It's very gimmicky. J. Jonah Jameson, his character is, I mean, he's pretty true to character, to be honest, except for the little, like, devil elf ears that he has going on. And apparently, like, that Jimmy Olsen works for him.
Well, and the funny thing is the storyline in here is kind of reminiscent to the storyline about the Scorpion.
Or the Spider Slayers, or that one time that J. Jonah Jameson built a robot. Like, this is very common in early Spider-Man that J. Jonah Jameson hires or creates some supervillain to try to take out Spider-Man.
Yep. So, mostly, you know, I enjoyed it for the little gags that they threw in. Not all the jokes worked for me. I think it's just very much of the age. But stuff like seeing Bucky lives, Alfred lives, they have Spider-Man as a centerfold in J. Jonah Jameson's bedtime reading material. He's got his little nightcap on, and then he's really mad. His nightshirt says, "Bring back Doc Ock." I think they, like, drew it, and then they just went through adding as much, you know, gag material as they could. They have funny stuff like one of the books that he reads is Squashing Spiders for Fun and Profit. Later, Spider-Man is reading a book that says Raising Hobbits for Fun and Profit, so that's a little fun little nod to Tolkien there. Yeah, it's really a weird little comic, and I wanna go find something that's, you know, more a serious work that Murray Severin drew, to kind of, you know, appreciate her stuff more. But this is pretty wacky, and just poking fun at Batman and Robin, which this came out in September 67, and so this was right in the height of, like, Batmania. You know, the Batman TV show was on from 68 to 68, so it was, like, enormous, you know, at that time. And so they're just, you know, poking fun at that, and that's kind of what ends up happening, is that J. Jonah Jameson gets rid of Spider-Man only to have him replaced by, you know, Nat-Man, and have that be the new thing that everyone is obsessed with, and that it gets annoyed with because it's everywhere. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. What did you guys think of it?
So I loved it.
Of course you did.
Like, a lot. I thought this was great. It's very much in the same vein as, like, Mad Magazine, where they're just throwing all the jokes at the wall, and oh, yeah, some of them are going to stick, and some of them are just going to slip off. And that style doesn't generally work for me very well, but I got so many of the jokes on this one. Yeah, they're doing a send-up of the Adam West Batman show with the Nat-Man character.
Yeah.
On page 5, we've got the phone call, the J. Jonah Jameson character, who is not actually Jameson. His name is J. Jawbone Junkton.
Oh, yeah. Lest we forget. It's also, yeah, Peter Pooper instead of Peter Parker. Cooper. Ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, that like you say, not all the jokes work. That one doesn't. But anyway, on page 5, Junkton calls Commissioner Good Guy, the Commissioner Gordon character, and it's a spot-on rendition of Commissioner Gordon from the Batman television show.
Oh, yeah.
The Nat-Man character costume is clearly inspired by the Adam West costume. The Robin one leaves a little bit to be desired in that regard. But these jokes, I don't know. The first page especially had me laughing out loud with all of the little references and the little jokes. You have Jimmy Olsen appearing in panel 2, calling Junkton to tell him about Spidey-Man, and the phone, he's in the phone booth, and the phone has a label on it that says temporarily in order.
That's like the, I like the gag from Futurama, their sign says, "Sorry, we're open."
almost every little panel has some crazy hidden joke. Panel 5 on the first page has Jughead from Archie Comics kind of sneakily hanging out on the side there. Panel 6 has Thor hanging out, and there are some bugs with suitcases walking along the street. Just all of these weird little gags. I loved it. It was, I thought, very rewarding to spend time looking to see all of the different gags, all of the different ways that they were making jokes and squeezing little curious images in. I had a really good time with this teensy little story. I honestly did.
Well, I'm glad someone did. What did you think, Aldo?
I think I'm in the same boat as you, John. Yeah. I did not like it all that much. I think there's some stuff in here that's that was cute, a little funny. I like how this, like, at least back to that same page that Steven was talking about, the last frame, Spider-Man has like a little bug thing on his back, but it's like an angry face bug.
Yeah.
instead of just a normal spider. But other than that, I don't know, the humor just did not hit with me very often.
I think Steven said, you know, they threw all the humor at the wall and saw what stuck, and if they had picked, you know, if they had made it a better parody, not where it was just like, let's cram as many jokes into every panel as we can.
I guess, and it's kind of like old Saturday Night Live, where, like, they would just throw everything, and, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I don't know, we'll see what sticks later, and it's like,
it's like, we're in funny costumes, so this means it's hilarious.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think there's some neat gags, and I think there's some stuff that, I guess, was as funny back then as it is today. Like making fun of Batman and Robin climbing up the side of a building all the time.
No, I think they sent them up pretty well, but this does remind me of a Batman parody where it's Bat-Boy, like they do a Batman parody where it's...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I used to read Mad Magazine. That's how immature I am. It felt like that, but it also felt like it was too many things going on at once.
Yeah, and not all of it. I think part of my problem is I also don't like how a lot of it just feels really random. So, I mean, like, on page 6 in the app, that frame on the bottom left where Jonah's signing the contract.
Uh-huh.
There's this whole thing going on about people risking their lives. And then you just have Rotten just reading a thing and then making a comment about icky teenage sidekicks. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. I think some of this is probably more topical. Like, if this came out in 67, that's around the time they would have brought Captain America back. And that's when they revealed that Bucky died. Like, Bucky didn't die in the original run of Captain America comics. Bucky died when they were telling the story of how Captain America got trapped in the ice and revived, and that happened in the Avengers, and that would have been around this time. Uh-huh. So I think it is very of its time. In that sense, it's sending up current events. Like, we're kind of lucky in that there's recently been this sort of renaissance regarding the Adam West Batman, so that a lot of those jokes still kind of make sense. But a lot of these other references, I think, are really meant for people who were reading the comics at the time.
Yeah, I don't know who it's for, but I don't think all of it's
for me. It's for me. I liked it. Did you guys catch that Daredevil's in this comic?
Yeah, and he's in the team of lawyers. He's in the team of lawyers. Same page we were just looking at. Glasses, red hair, hat, yep.
I get that, and I feel like that Flea Bailey name is meant to be a joke or a reference, and that's lost.
Yeah, and there are a couple of those. There's an in-joke. They actually call it out with an editorial note talking about Mort Weenieberger. And I know that that's someone from comics history, and I have no idea who that is.
They also mention a no prize, which is what they would award to people who pointed out their errors. And they'd say, well, good for you. Here's a no prize. It's not really anything. They also have the Mighty Marvel Marching Society singing in the background of one of these panels, I think.
Yeah, there's a Mighty Marvel Marching Society button.
Oh, okay, that's what it is. I was like...
Oh, yeah, the MMA.
Yeah, on the bottom of page 7. Now, honestly, to me, this is kind of the perfect Stan Lee comic. Like, this is a Stan Lee written story. And Stan Lee was always really good at sort of the crazy bombastic style, and he was also good at poking fun at his competitors. And so it was kind of nice to see that turned on himself, on his own company, at the same time that he was taking down his distinguished competition.
That's true.
I think we might have talked about this in past episodes. I kind of have issues with Stan Lee as a creator, as a writer, but this helps to humanize him a little bit. I have a lot of respect for someone who can make fun of himself. And I like that Stanley's got this self-effacing style that he brings to bear in this comic, where he's not just poking fun at Batman and Robin, but he's also poking fun at the whole of Marvel Comics, at some of the storytelling choices that they make in order to sell more issues, and that he's poking so much fun at Spider-Man.
I think it's more an excuse to, you know, make fun of Batman and Robin, who were, you know, enormous then, but... Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And it feels very much like his type of style and everything.
I also think it's really interesting talking about Marie Severin's art. She's definitely doing a very comedic style. She's doing a lot of caricatures. She draws a kind of over-the-top J. Jonah Jameson type. She draws some spot-on impressions of Jimmy Olsen and Commissioner Gordon. And she draws a very plastic, exaggerated Spider-Man. But then it's really funny when you get to the end of the story on page 10... We've got this last panel that has, again, your J. Jawbone Junkton comically walking around. But then you've got just spot-on Peter Parker, Mary Jane, Gwen Stacy. Like, those are almost the John Romita Sr. character designs. They look really close to what Romita would have drawn.
I think that's more of a, hey, we're all done joking now, and look how well Peter's doing for himself, and, you know, sucks to be J. Jonah Jameson.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of, I took this as kind of a cute little acknowledgement of how Spider-Man is supposed to have just this really hard life, but he's always surrounded by these really pretty party girls that are inexplicably interested in him.
Yeah. Well, I think that's more about Flash Thompson being a, you know, turd than anything else, but yeah, I get you. Yeah, I think that we've covered it. This isn't like...
I do want to say one thing about the cover.
Yeah.
I actually kind of hate this cover. And I actually, in particular, the thing that bugs me is the title itself, not Brand Ech. That's three different fonts for three different words.
It is.
Uh-huh. It's a mess.
Yeah. So is featuring Spider-Man versus Nightman Rotten.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me as much because you kind of expect that, especially in comics of this era. But for the title to have all of those different fonts is...
But I think that's kind of the point, though. I mean, Steven, who says a comic book has to be good?
Yeah, read the top line, Steven. You skipped right over that.
I thought it was good, guys.
Well, you were the one.
All right, well, I think that one's going to be a fun one to rank, but we're not going to go there quite yet. We've got a couple of other stories to talk about first, and I think I'll go ahead and take the next one. We're going to take a quick Spidey break. We're coming back to him. But for our intermission, let's talk about Ghost Rider.
Ooh. Ooh.
This one was wild. Now, is this like what we read? Did they put this together from an origin story from like a couple of things, or is this the first Ghost Rider?
This is the first Ghost Rider story.
Are you serious? Yep,
Marvel Spotlight number 5. This is the first appearance of Ghost Rider.
It kind of just goes. It starts out going.
It really does. This story, this is not how I would choose to introduce the character, I don't think. But then again,
no.
It's interesting. I think we're seeing the early version of the character, but not what he would eventually become.
Nicolas Cage.
Yes, Nicolas Cage is who he would eventually become. So Ghost Rider is at least partially created by Gary Friedrich, who recently passed away. Friedrich's story is kind of a tragic one. He helped to create Ghost Rider. He did a lot of work on Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, a wartime comic. He did some work on the Monster of Frankenstein story. Eventually, he fell into a dispute with Marvel Comics over the rights to the character. First, he claimed more creation. Like, it's kind of almost a Bob Kane, Bill Finger scenario where they kind of fight over who created what aspects of the character of Batman. Friedrich claims a lot of ownership over Ghost Rider, in so much that he actually claims that he came up with the design, the flaming skull, the guy on the motorcycle, the artist who was Roy Thomas. Disagrees with that story. That gets frustrating. Well, I guess this was actually drawn by Mike Ploog, excuse me. Roy Thomas was the editor, I believe.
I would, yeah. It'd be nice if they just listed it because it says aided and abetted, or aid and abetment is Roy Thomas.
Yeah, yeah. He would have been the editor.
Yeah.
So lots of argument over that. Friedrich actually filed a lawsuit against Marvel to try to reclaim ownership of the character in the wake of the Ghost Rider movies with Nicolas Cage. Did not win those suits. And I guess eventually they settled out of court, and that's kind of where Friedrich's story ended. He died, like we said, a little bit earlier this year. Kind of tragic that that's where it kind of wound up. But anyway, as to the story itself, this is the origin of the character Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider is one of the most intense Marvel Comics characters. He's got just such a striking visual. He's a biker, a motorbiker, with a leather jacket. His bike has fiery wheels. He has a skull face with flame shooting out of it. It's a very striking visual, but then when you read this comic, a lot of it is very muted. A lot of the elements that we know about the character or come to associate with the character later on don't appear here. His motorcycle, for all appearances, is just a regular motorcycle. This is the story of Johnny Blaze, who is a stuntman for the circus. His dad dies in a motorcycle accident. His mom dies in a motorcycle accident shortly thereafter. He refuses to give up riding, even though he stops riding in the shows, because he promised his mom on her deathbed that he wouldn't do that anymore.
Well, remember that it's like his adoptive
family. Oh, it's his adoptive family. That's right, because after his father dies, he's an orphan. He's raised by the circus. He falls for this woman's daughter. That's an important distinction to make sure that we know that he's kind of adopted here. That's almost an anime trope.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
After having so much motorcycle-related tragedy, he vows to never ride a bike again, gets called a coward by his mentor in the circus, as well as by the woman that he loves, whose father is the mentor. This feels very, very confusing, even though it's not. It's very straightforward.
And it's also his adoptive
father. Adopted father, adopted sister, yeah. But no blood relation.
I'll make that very clear.
He continues to ride in secret. Eventually, like, he admits that he hasn't been riding in the circus because of the promise that he made to the woman's mother. And what was her name? Is her name Rocky? Is that it? What was it? Yeah.
No, that's the Roxanne. Girl. That's the sister.
Yeah, he calls her Rocky. So anyway, Rocky falls in love with him. Rocky, who is like the most fickle romantic interest I think I have ever seen.
No kidding.
She's like, oh, I hate you. Oh, you did it for your mom. Oh, I love you. Oh, how could you? Oh, we are not friends anymore. Oh, kiss me, you devilish rogue. Ugh. Like 5 times in this one story. It's ridiculous.
Devilish rogue.
You see where you
So they get this big opportunity to perform their motorcycle show at Madison Square Garden. Crash Simpson, that's the mentor, that's the adoptive sort of, the new adoptive father, Rocky's father. Crash reveals that he's got some sort of terminal illness and he's not going to last the month. Rocky tries to convince Johnny Blaze to take over the motorcycle show and he refuses to do it. And so she cries and calls him a coward and runs away.
Again.
So Johnny decides that the one thing that he can do to make sure that Crash Simpson's legacy stays intact is to make sure that Crash doesn't die. And so he sells his soul to Satan to keep Crash from dying to this illness that he has.
That was the biggest, craziest jump for me. He was like, what am I going to do? Oh, no. Time to call Satan, just like that, like immediately. Like, she calls him a coward, and then, you know, his adopted father keeps calling him a coward and not even acknowledging the fact that he's doing it, you know, for his late wife. He's just like, eh, whatever, you're a coward, you're yellow. And then he's like, well, what am I going to do? I'm going to call Satan.
Yep.
And I, this is like early enough Marvel that it's actually Satan and not like Mephisto.
Regardless, the day of the performance at Madison Square Garden comes, Crash decides that he's going to break the world record by jumping his motorcycle over 22 cars, and he doesn't, and he dies in an accident.
But if you look at the fine print from Satan, he didn't die from the disease.
Yep. And Johnny Blaze gets so angry about this, he does, again, the most logical thing he could do. This giant crowd at Madison Square Garden just watched someone die attempting this feat. So he does it. Blaze gets on his motorcycle, jumps over the cars, makes it over the 22 cars, and he thinks somehow that's going to make everything right. Rocky, of course, gets mad at him again and storms off. And then we learn the fine print. Again, Satan says he kept his bargain, and now Johnny Blaze has to fulfill his side of the deal, which is to wear the head of a flaming skull and run around at night.
Don't forget the part where his not girlfriend one minute and girlfriend the next, you know, read and memorized how to ward off the devil.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Rocky knows that she can ward off Satan because she has a pure soul, and so she just walks into the room and Satan leaves.
Yeah, she just had that information. You know, she's not afraid of Satan, and she's, you know, confident enough in her own purity that she's like, get out of here, Satan.
Yeah, never mind the fact that she was been reading these books, and apparently at no point was she like, Satan's probably not real.
Right. Nor was she at any point like, hey, Johnny, I know you're going through a hard time, but I don't know, have you ever considered yoga? Like, what makes you go from, oh, we all think you're a coward, to, well, I guess I need to find comfort in the arms of the devil.
Yeah,
it really bothered me that there was no, like, lead up to it. It was no, like, he went to all the experts around and he, you know, couldn't find any, like, you know, there was no Doctor Strange, like, hunt for a cure. It was, well, I'm going to call Satan.
Wait, you're saying this story would have been improved by being more like Spider-Man one more day?
Hey, man, don't twist my words. I'm saying, like, you know, when Stephen Strange hurt his hands, I'm not saying, like, when Peter Parker appealed to Doctor Strange. Nothing, I'm never going to... No, one more day is not a good example. I'm not going to use it.
Man. At least this Satan didn't show him, like, a picture of, I don't know, like, his daughter-to-be. This Satan was just like, yo, dog, here you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a straight-to-business Satan. That's my preferred Satan.
I like Satan who doesn't beat around the bush.
It's like, he's already taken my beautiful, gorgeous, luscious blonde locks.
Yeah.
I've already suffered
enough. Jeez.
Man, I just got the image of Aldo wearing like a big blonde wig, and it's the coolest thing that I could think of. Dude, you should try that. You should try that this weekend. Throw on the blonde wig.
I'll put that on my to-do list.
So what do we think about the Ghost Rider story?
Pass.
All of his beautiful, luscious, long ones. You know, I know you guys said that, like, it was muted and, like, this isn't the way you would have introduced him. I actually really liked it.
Really?
I really like the fact that we start out, and it starts out really mysterious, because if you're in the mindset that you don't know who or what the Ghost Rider is, it does just start out with, like, an air of mystery. Like, he's on the cover, he's the front page dude. And he's getting chased by, like, these thugs. And you know, he's a dude with, like, a flaming skull. You know he can kill them. But there's, like, a bit of intrigue as to why he's trying so hard not to. So the eventual kind of reveal of, like, his backstory, and you find out that he's actually kind of, like, a decent dude and, like, a nice person. You're like, oh, he's purposely trying to not kill them because it's something he can't control. And that kind of makes him a little bit more interesting.
I you're right. I just think that the way that they told, like, you know, setting it up like that, sure.
Mm-hmm.
The way they decided to tell it, like, the way they did that, their execution of that plan was crap. Because it was this weird, weird melodrama.
And I agree. I mean, there's aspects of it I don't know that I like. Like, specifically him going like, oh no, he has cancer, call Satan.
They never call it cancer.
They call it the disease. It's just like a wink, wink, nod, nod. Like, did the comics code have a problem with talking about cancer?
I don't know.
Because I'm going to tell you this, you get zapped by gamma rays, you're going to have cancer, so.
I feel like if the comics code was actually the motivation behind not naming the disease, they probably wouldn't have gone straight to Johnny Blaze selling his soul to high literal Satan.
So, I mean, there's stuff like that I don't agree with. I don't care for how fickle Roxanne is. Like, it is absolutely fickle. They're calling them cowards, and they're calling them coward in yellow one frame, and, like, two pages later, she's like, I love you.
Yeah.
And then it's like, why won't you ride? He's like, girl, I told you. Oh, you're a coward. Oh, my gosh. Like, Yeah, so there's aspects of it that haven't aged well, but I like it.
I would still like to find out what happens next, so it was effective that way. Mm-hmm. The art isn't bad.
No, actually, the art, I'm flipping through it. The art is solid. There's some really striking images in here.
Actually, on one of my favorite pictures, it's on page 13, and it's the bottom left frame where it's like the close-up of his Crash or Max, whatever his name is. This is that close-up, and it's him like in a silhouette with like the blue and yellows.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's good. That's primo. Not well contrasted by the picture on the upper right frame where Roxanne is having trouble looking straight.
Yeah, she's got a little bit of lazy eyes going on.
Yeah. That is not the best portrait I've seen in.
No, let's focus on the positive for a bit. I want to go to page 15, the first appearance of Satan. This is such a good image. It's, you know, the Lord of Lies sitting on a throne. His face is in shadow, and there's all this blue and purple mist separating him from Johnny. And you can see Johnny kind of like cowering on the floor. He's got a bloody pentagram drawn on his chest, and he's hiding his face, and his pants are kind of falling off. He looks very pathetic in this picture. So you contrast how weak Johnny Blaze looks compared to the power of the being that he summoned. I think the art captures that really well.
It's very Chernabog from Fantasia.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about like Chernabog and a lot of that drama, there's a lot of really great striking poses. Like on page 21, when he's first turning into the Ghost Rider, that is a really good image. Like his arms are stretched out. Like that. And then like the next couple of pages are just really good stuff. Like him, even him putting up the gloves is really like dramatic and overdone. And I kind of love it.
No, that's a great little image of him putting the glove on and kind of staring off into space and being very like determined. That's a real hero suiting up pose. Of course, what he's doing is sneaking out.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure the gravity of the image really matches the tone of the comic at this point.
I think, you know, the style of Ghost Rider, the imagery is always strong and striking and cool. And so it was smart to lead off with, you know, here's the Ghost Rider, and you're like, whoa, that is like flaming skeleton dude riding a motorcycle. So I'm in, whatever. And then you get into this like stuntman, and it's like, maybe they could have led with the, you know, like, hey, here's Stuntman Johnny, who's also into the dark arts. You know, like, they just, like, it just came out of nowhere. Like, if they had, like, you know, a lingering dude in some of the early panels, like, bugging him the whole time, then you turn out, oh, that was Satan the whole time who was trying to tempt him, you know, and he finally agreed to this deal.
So, John, you had your deep, dirty confession a while back about how you kind of liked the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
Okay, the last time I watched it with riff tracks, so any error was glaring, you know?
You don't have to get defensive, because I'm about to cop to really liking the Ghost Rider movies.
Oh, jeez.
You know what, though? I really like the Ghost Rider movies.
Yes!
I really like the first one.
I think it was after Matchstick Men, I was like, okay, Nicolas Cage, no more. No. And that wasn't even a terrible movie compared to, like, I don't know, pick one that he's made in the last, like, 15 years.
I just think that Nicolas Cage is the most genuine thespian we have living among us.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a scene in, I think it's the first Ghost Rider movie, where Nicolas Cage, as Johnny Blaze, is in lockup. And he starts to transform, and he starts acting just crazy. Like, laughing in the face of all these people who are poking fun at him, and then he turns into the Ghost Rider. And Cage's expression, the crazy faces he's making, I kind of love it. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, I really like when, actually, it's that, yeah, because he's going all crazy and, like, all the facial expressions. And then when he's up in his apartment, and he's turning into the Ghost Rider... Mm-hmm. I think for like the first time, and he's like that he's aware of it, and like you like how his face is changing. I love Nicolas Cage, and I love that movie.
Now let's manage expectations here. The Ghost Rider movies are by no means actually good, okay, but cool. I do like them.
See, I didn't bother because of how bad I heard they were, and so maybe it's worth like watching with friends to like actually can't it's to definitively say. Hey, these are pretty lousy. But I heard so much about like he would paint his face when they were doing like visual effects shots, so he had like skull makeup on, and like he was like, yeah, I studied how scorpions move because I wanted the Ghost Rider to have like a weird walk. And it's like, you are just bat crap. You're not even acting. You're just nuts. And they're putting a camera on you. And luckily it works for Ghost Rider, I guess.
If he was 10 years younger, he could play the Joker.
If he was 10 years younger, he'd probably play Superman. Long hair.
But to bring it back to the comic,
I want to know more about Ghost Rider. I want to like it because it's different from other heroes, you know. Mm-hmm. But this was a weird intro into it.
And at this point, it's actually kind of hard to call Ghost Rider a hero, because what does he do that's actually heroic in this story? Those guys that are chasing him, Ghost Rider watches them shoot a man in the face, and he does nothing about it. He just kind of tries to keep his head down and mind his own business. But again, his head is a giant flaming skull, so of course people notice him. And so these guys start chasing him, not because he's a freak or because he's weird, but because like he saw them kill a man, and they want to silence him so he can't tell on them.
I think calling him a hero, specifically in this context, is probably not the right word, but he's the protagonist.
Yeah, he's definitely the protagonist, but like, I don't know. It's hard for me to feel sympathetic for the man, because he doesn't do much to earn that sympathy. Oh, his girlfriend doesn't like him. Oh, his boss thinks he's a coward.
Steven, he's just been dealt Satan powers. He's trying to cope.
Can we call this episode, Are You There, Satan? It's Me, Johnny.
Done and done.
Okay. It was just such a weird leap. It was like, let's see. But you couldn't go, not when they needed you. Still, there was no one you could turn to. No one except Satan. It's just like, pump the brakes. Like, where? Like, this whole time he's this, like, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, like, perfect dude and everything. And he's like, and then all of a sudden he's like, well.
I also really like the idea of Johnny just not even buying, but, like, just checking out Satan books from the library.
What library is he going to?
That's so funny. He's just like, he's willing to sell his soul, but he's not willing to buy the books about the occult.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, whoa, I don't want people to see these on my shelves. I got neighbors.
Hey, Johnny Blaze is kind of hard up for cash right now, because if he had cash, he would probably just offer Satan like $5 to keep his hands off of Crash.
Or, you know, they probably would have bought medicine.
Yeah.
Or taking the guy to, like, another place. I don't know.
Jeez.
Bought a better motorcycle.
Or insurance. But that kind of stops your comic dead when you have a whole scene, like, in the claims office, you know, and you're, like, trying to work out with the adjuster, like, how to cover a 22-bus leap. And it's, well, you know, we're good up to 18 bus. I know, but we want to do 22. Well, it's never been done before. We need a whole new form.
It's almost like stories aren't meant to be about logical people doing logical things.
So yeah, I still would like to read more Ghost Rider, but this particular one, not doing it for me.
Me neither, unfortunately. Although, again, they struck on a winning character design and enough little hooks for this character that it's like, okay, yeah, let's refine him a little bit. Let's keep coming back to him. And I feel like 40 or so years later, we still don't quite know what to do with Ghost Rider, because they keep trying. They keep changing the character in some pretty significant ways. And some versions of the character work and some don't. But I actually think that's almost to the character's benefit. It's like, there are so many different versions of Ghost Rider that you are almost guaranteed to find one that you like.
That's a good point.
I really like Robbie Reyes in the comics.
Yeah, I've only heard good things about Robbie Reyes, and I think that's cool.
Same, but I haven't read any of it yet.
Reyes is he's the lead in the Secret Wars Ghost Rider's Death Race comic. Which, nice. So here's the thing. I will always go back to Secret Wars and like the 1,000 spinoffs they did. But those were some really good spin-offs. And the fact that Ghost Riders was like a Death Race, like Battle Royale-like thing, compromised of only Ghost Riders, was dope.
That's pretty cool.
But speaking of Ghost Rider, the Marvel Spotlight number 5, Any final thoughts on this story?
Not ready to count out Ghost Rider yet, but...
oh, no, absolutely not.
But I think that we could have used, like, just, like, one more page of him, like, you know, thumbing through the white pages at least and being like, oh, hey, you know what I haven't considered yet? Doctors, nurses, lawyers, insurance, Satan. Like, there could have been, like, I needed it one more stepping stone between... What am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Prince of Darkness, you know.
And I hate that you pointed this out, but again, I really love like the really great dramatic poses.
Yeah.
But they're really out of place now that you mention it. Because there's the other one I'm looking at is when he gets back to his apartment after being the Ghost Rider. And he's like, will I ever be free? And then he's like, takes off his jacket. Or he puts on his jacket. I'm like, doomed to a dual life.
We don't get those mundane moments, you know. We don't ever get to see like Ghost Rider changing a light bulb or something, or like, you know, like small talk at the mailboxes at the, you know, first floor of the apartment building or something, where it's just like, hey, they're gonna change the carpets in the foyers next week. Oh, okay.
Man, you would really like Nick Cage's Ghost Rider.
I think on that note, we're ready to move on to our final comic. We're going to take a look at Amazing Fantasy number 15.
Yeah.
What a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. Famously, the first appearance of Spider-Man.
Yeah, so a bit of context around Amazing Fantasy. So before this, the only like self-titled book was The Fantastic Four, which launched in 1961. This book, Amazing Fantasy 15, launched in 62, or at least this particular issue was in 62. Before that, no other hero really had their own title apart from the Fantastic Four family. So you had like Tales to Astonish, Strange Tales. So you had a lot of those anthology books. And the kind of the practice when in that was to have a bunch of stories and see what stuck, see what readers were voting for, or calling in for. And when Spider-Man came out, I guess the fan demand or appreciation for him was so overwhelming that almost immediately received his own book. When you look at stuff like Stephen Strange, like Doctor Strange, or even Hulk, or a lot of those characters, they stayed in the anthology books for a while before given their own title. Not so with Amazing Fantasy 15 and Spider-Man.
I did not know that.
No, it's one of those like tidbits that I love, because I love Spider-Man and I love the fact that a lot of people love Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's a very universally loved character.
Yeah.
And one of Stan Lee's favorites, even though he talks a lot about how he didn't think a character based on a spider would do well to people. But I think, and I think this comic covers a lot of why people like Spider-Man, because this comic covers actually quite a bit. So you have Peter Parker, who's in high school. Science nerd and dork, gets bullied by like the cute girls before he started hanging out with supermodels. gets bullied by the cute girls, rejected and stuff. Gets bullied by the jocks for being a science nerd. The only real people like in his life that like him are his aunt and uncle, who take care of him. When he gets his spider powers, he becomes a wrestler and actually, this isn't really... Not a lot of people reference this, but I didn't realize it till I read this book, you know, a few years ago. He doesn't just become a wrestler for, like, a little bit. He, like, starts to make a career out of it, and he makes television appearances.
He becomes a TV star!
Yeah, he's a TV star as Spider-Man. Eventually, he's given the opportunity to stop a thief, but he's so tired of getting told what to do by everybody that he doesn't stop this thief, as he's told to do this by a cop. So he lets him go, and then a few days later, his dear old Uncle Ben is killed. And when he goes to track down the killer, it's lo and behold, it's the man he let go. And thus kind of begins his journey to atone for his sin and to never let anybody die.
Yeah, for more on this story, watch the first half of the 2001 Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, because that's basically it. It
yeah, really honestly, is. Like, when I first read this book, I think in 2001, and I know this specifically, because when you go look for Amazing Fantasy 15, there's a different book on here that was published in 2011.
Yeah.
That was an anniversary edition that's been recolored.
Oh, what?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I have a copy of the 2011 recolor anniversary issue that I have signed by Stan Lee. Huh.
Stan the man himself?
Stan the man. Sly Stan, as he's referred to.
Smiling Stan.
Yeah. So that's the first time I read that, and I was like, holy crap, like the Raimi movie was a love letter to this.
It really was. And like, you know, as much as I really hate 3, but, and a lot of, like, you know, stuff, I think generally in movies when it's like, hey everyone, it's Macy Gray, and it's like, oh, you just aged the movie. As soon as it comes out on video, it's going to be old, but because you've just, yeah, it's, yeah. But there are some things that they nailed, and I think, like, Uncle Ben was really, it's still sad.
Yeah, so I also didn't realize how much he pulled from just a book, or like at least how much you could make a book into an interesting hour of film.
Yeah, and not even the whole book. Like, the Spider-Man origin story only takes up 12 pages of this 26-page comic. Mm-hmm. And, oh, wait, that's actually including the cover? So 11 pages?
Yeah. You get a lot of backstory. You get, I think, a pretty endearing character. Because you see him get bullied. And then you see him get a little cocky. And then you see him get humbled again. And yeah. That's a lot more characterization than you get from, like, other series in, like, 20 issues.
And what I think is really interesting about this is that Spider-Man doesn't just go from timid to cocky to remorseful, but there are different layers in between. He goes from timid to resentful. Like, yes. You get to the bottom of page 3, and this is after he's been bullied by some of his peers. He asks a girl to go with him to the museum, and she blows him off and tells him to give our regards to the Atom Smashers, Peter. And the next panel isn't him being, aw, geez, it sucks to be me. It's him saying, someday I'll show them. Someday they'll be sorry. Sorry that they laughed at me.
Man, this could have been a villain origin story very easily.
I know! And you go from there, he gets his spider powers, and he goes to the wrestling ring, and he gets, not only does he get cocky, but he's very self-absorbed. He doesn't care about anybody. He even says as much. You get this bit at the bottom of page 9. This is after Spider-Man fails to stop the thief, or refuses to stop the thief. Aunt May and Uncle Ben have scrimped and saved and bought him a microscope, and he's really happy about it. But then you get to the thought bubble, and he's like, they're the only ones who've ever been kind to me. I'll see to it that they're always happy, but the rest of the world can go hang for all I care. Like, it's not just that he gets cocky, but he actively rejects being a part of society. He doesn't care to look out for anybody except for his own and himself, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And to see that transition from this really selfish brat to someone who realized, oh, if I don't look out for other people, that's going to come back around and hurt me, so I need to do everything that I can at all times in order to make sure that I am the best version of myself that I can be. You know, like, that transformation is really striking to go through in just 11 pages.
And I think it's also interesting because even though he gets the bad guy, it doesn't end, like, on a happy note.
I know, right?
Nope.
It really doesn't. Like, that last shot is him, like, walking home in the middle of the street at night. It's a somber scene, and he's walking. He may have caught the bad guy, but he did not win.
No. And it's really interesting to compare this story to the other two stories in Amazing Fantasy number 15. I'm not sure if you actually went on and read them.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't blame you. They're not as good.
I saw the name of the next one, and I was like, nope.
The Bell Ringer?
Yes.
No, but the other two stories in Amazing Fantasy 15, it's a story of a man whose obligation it is to ring the bell to make sure that ships stay away from the rocky coast in fog. And he refuses to leave his post even when the volcano erupts, and he winds up getting raptured into heaven at the end. And the other story is about this crook who is trying to evade guards in a museum, and he strikes a deal with a mummy. The mummy hides him in a sarcophagus, so the guards don't find him, but the sarcophagus actually transports him back in time, and now he's a slave in ancient Egypt. Huh. Like, they're these weird sorts of Twilight Zone stories.
I was just going to say, that feels very Twilight Zone.
Exactly, and that's what Spider-Man's origin is. It's a Twilight Zone story. It's about a man who gets everything he ever wanted, and it winds up costing him because he didn't use it responsibly. It, like, You could put Rod Serling as the voice of the narrator in this, and it would fit 100%.
Hey, true believers.
Peter Parker thought he was so slick. There was, I think it was Chris Hardwick has a bit where he's like, I love Twilight Zone, but everything could be called nice try, a-hole. Like, because it's always like, you know, someone tries to cheat everybody they know, and then they just get what's coming to them in the end.
And that's 100% what happens here.
I haven't thought about it that way. I was mostly like, let's get to the Sam Raimi part where Cliff Roberts dies and my heart breaks all over again.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that it's how much it's grown from this, but, you know, this is, what, 11 pages we said?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about, I think it was an interview with Denny O'Neill talking about how if you wanted to have, you know, now everything is geared towards like, you know, like a 6-issue arc or something where it collects well as a trade. And he said you had to have a really good reason to go more than one issue. You know, the Fantastic Four meets and defeats Galactus in like an issue and a half, and then Johnny Storm goes off to college at the end of the second issue or something. And so that's like, and the Silver Surfer is introduced. Like, all of these huge things happen, all taken care of in a limited number of issues. So it's very of the time that we get this, you know, this iconic origin story. And it's, oh, only, you know, 11 pages long. It's, you know, however many panels. But.
Yeah. I think it's also telling if you really want to go like a 1-to-1 comparison on it. But if you look at Ultimate Spider-Man, this whole first issue, I think, is about the first arc.
Maybe yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, I think it's about the first, like, 6 issues, the first 5 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man. Covers about the same story we're seeing here.
Well, Sam Raimi took about an hour to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit longer.
Because I'll tell you what this doesn't have. It's a 15-minute training montage with Peter Parker going, go, Web, go!
That joke played really well at the time.
Up, up, and away, Web.
I think it's interesting to look
Bye,
at.
Web.
You can tell that this is a 60s comic.
Uh-huh.
Because of the way that it hyphenates the word teenager.
Oh, yeah. This was before that it was a thing.
Right, this was around the time that marketers were recognizing that teenagers were kind of their own demographic, this age group of not children, but they weren't adults, they were in high school, but they had some economic freedom because many of them had jobs. Like, that was a market. And they all kind of catered towards this market. A lot of creators started catering towards this market in the same way, and that was by having jerky teenage characters with giant letters on their shirts. I'm not, like, I noticed reading this time through that Flash Thompson he's wearing a shirt with the giant letter T on it, and it's just like, okay, this is Archie Comics again. This is exactly like Archie Comics, except, you know, Archie gets bitten by a radioactive spider partway through and turns into an entitled dweeb.
That actually, going back to the Marie Severin book that we read, and not Brand Eck or whatever, seeing him with Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane felt very Archie. But like, you know, knowing who they are, it's different. But yeah,
I don't know, guys. I like this book a lot.
Oh yeah,
it's solid. And even though I've expressed in the past some of my hangups with Steve Ditko as an artist, he's not my favorite. Like, this works for me really well. I really like the coloring. I went and flipped over to the recolored version from 2001 or whatever. I don't like it.
No,
I do not like those colors. Uh-huh. These colors, these original colors with all of these garish yellows, work so well.
I think the only thing I like of the recolored version more is probably the cover. I love the cover art for it.
You know what it's colored like? It's colored to look like Batman Year One.
Oh, that's true.
This original, though, Amazing Fantasy 15... This is a solid piece of comics. There's a reason that the movies keep telling the same story over and over again. It works really well.
They set up like 70 years of a superhero off of like 11 pages.
Yeah. Yeah. And even though Spider-Man has changed a lot, he's never really departed from this central philosophy that you can't shirk your responsibility. You have an obligation to the greater good, and by failing to live up to that, you put other people in danger.
You know, I love the "with great power comes great responsibility." How many times it gets repeated? I think that in the newest incarnation, the Tom Holland version, how he explains "great power, great responsibility" is much better than flat out saying it 1,000 times.
It's honestly a line that reads better than it is spoken.
Yeah,
and I don't think it works better in just about any context. Like, I really like it when it came up in Spider-Man, okay, when Peter Parker's saying it to Ultimate Aunt May, and they kind of finish each other's sentence.
Yeah.
But, like, in this story, we don't get the line, "great power, great responsibility," until the last panel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's this, again, it's Rod Serling. "And as a lean, silent figure slowly fades into the gathering darkness, aware at last that in this world, with great power, there must also come great responsibility. And so a legend is born, and a new name is added to the roster of those who make the world of fantasy the most exciting realm of all, the realm of the Twilight Zone."
Nice try, a-hole.
Yeah. Like, it's the moral of the story. It's not something that Uncle Ben tells him and he just blows off. It's this is the lesson that he learned the hard way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it works so much better in that context than it does in maybe any other.
You know what I think the other lesson he learned really well is that pupils don't work in the Spider-Man mask.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad they did. Oh my gosh. That.
Yeah. That was one thing where I was like, ooh, I wish that you, you know.
No, Ditko, we tried it once. Don't do it again.
It's only that one frame, too. It's in, like, no other panel. I've been trying to figure out how to bring
bad.
It.
It's so bad.
I was going to say another thing before moving on. Is that I made a comment about it earlier, how, like, these 11 pages set up, you know, a 50, 70-year franchise.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to be said as well for Ditko's design of the Spider-Man costume.
Oh, yeah.
That it hasn't been changed in years. And it's been substituted out for, like, short bits when the story has demanded it. But the fact that we've, you know, as a people have gone back to that design years and years, the fact that, like, one, like, amongst the many complaints that the Amazing Spider-Man movies had, like, the one thing they did right was to get the costume right in the second film when they went for this totally classic look. And a lot of people were willing to give that movie a chance because of that. Like, I think speaks volumes to kind of the design here for the character.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun costume to draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks really busy and really, really complicated. Like, I have doodled it a couple of times. I'm not much of an artist, but I kind of enjoy dinking around from time to time. But once you get the basic shape of the costume, all those little webs, they're actually very cathartic to draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a repetitive action that, like, you just have to, like, plan out one and then everything else follows it.
Yep.
Another thing before we leave off is on page 9... it's probably my new favorite Spider-Man pose at the bottom left.
He's just, "bye, Felicia."
Yes. It looks like he's popping his booty out a little bit. He's just like, "bye." Mm-mm, girlfriend, I got better things to do.
You just take your sass and you get out of here. I'm sashaying home.
Anyways.
Yeah, that's embarrassing for everyone. Let's move on. So that's 3 stories that we've read. Now it's time to rank them. So we've got 23 stories on our list. Number 1 is No Normal by G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona. And number 23 is Spider-Man One More Day by J. Michael Straczynski, Joe Quesada, and Lucifer himself. So, where do we want to rank these? Let's start with Spidey-Man versus Nat-Man and Rotten.
Sorry, I'm just thinking, hello, my name is Joe Lucifer.
So, I'm going to go ahead and say it first, because I really liked it, and I'm the only one, apparently. Like, this, to me, would probably go between A-Babies versus X-Babies in Thor's Battle World.
Mm.
No, democracy is going to smack you on this one.
I am not going to get my way on this one. Yeah. I can already tell.
Yeah, sucks to be you, Mr. Steven Flyover State. You're not getting your vote in.
I would honestly put this below Exiles.
Oh, really? Because I would put it below Civil War, below Matsuo, below... Yeah, I would put it above Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk. So I would put it... Wow. It's just not for me. Like, it should be. I love Mad Magazine, but I just... I part of it, where I think about where things should be ranked, would I read it again? And I would read Happily Ever After again. I would not read Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk again. So maybe that's the line, and I don't think I'd read this again, so not Brand X. That's my vote.
For me, I look at this almost the exact same way that I did A Babies versus X Babies, because there were so many little jokes in all the panels, and just the delight that I got from, oh my gosh, that's Matt Murdock. Oh my gosh, there's a Bucky Lives note. I really enjoyed all of those little jokes, and to me, it had the same level of enjoyment as A Babies versus X Babies, but it's older and it's more dated, so I don't think it goes above it. But I would absolutely read it again before I read Thor's Battle World, which I know probably makes Aldo sad, but that's just the way I feel, and I'm not going to apologize for it.
I just feel that even for as dated, I think I had more of a fun time with Exiles, and I would recommend Exiles before I would recommend this book.
I'd recommend Civil War. I think it should go below Civil War.
Wouldn't go that far, because it's still entertaining, and I think that's part of the reason why I put it above Pain Train with Punisher.
See, Pain Train is higher than I think it should be, as it is now, so...
And I think it's lower than it should be. I don't think we've ever been this divided on a story before.
No.
I'm willing to, tossing Steven's vote completely out, I'm willing to go along with it going after Exiles and just trust that naturally better comics will shove it down. That's a good point, Steven, about A Babies versus X Babies, like being full of in references and stuff. But I think that the story was tighter with that one because it was just a bunch of fight scenes. This was a mess. This was like they were throwing dialogue at you, and that they were throwing, like, just like you said, everything, just throw it all at the wall, and it just didn't work.
I'm sticking by what I said.
All right, I think Aldo splitting the difference being the middle vote there.
Once again.
Yeah.
Aldo, you're good at that, apparently. Yeah, I think that's our place for it. So that puts it at number 17, I believe?
Yes.
All right, now let's move on to Marvel Spotlight number 5, Ghost Rider.
Not in the top 10.
No.
I would put this below Thor's, and I like this a lot. Actually, I was going to say I would put it down one more. I was going to say I would probably... put it below... Actually, no, I don't like this as... I like this more than Search for Eternity.
You know, that's fair. Search for Eternity, that was a tough slog. That was, you know, some good stuff in there, but... Steven, what do you think?
Yeah, I would put it lower. Like, to me, this goes around... Like, I would put it between Civil War and Kill Matsuo.
Ooh, oh, really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Like, I think there's some good Ghost Rider stuff that comes later. Uh-huh. I didn't love this. I, like, the decent bits of artwork aren't enough to save it for me. But we also have a huge stretch of comics there that I think are lower than they should be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked Vader Down better than you guys. I liked Pain Train. But I would rather read either of those again before I read this.
I could concede to putting this below Pain Train and above Civil War.
I'm okay with that.
I mean, I'm okay with that, but I think once we get to that point, it's like, do we really want to say that this is better than Civil War? I mean, I would, because I don't like Civil War, but...
Ooh, you brought up that question. Dang.
That Civil yes. War is a good, like, you know, tentpole to have at that point, you know. I like Civil War better than this Ghost Rider origin.
Okay.
I think Civil War is more required reading. Like, if you really want to get a feel for what makes the Ghost Rider character interesting, this isn't where you start.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I think, yeah, if you came back to it after you've seen him working as, like, you know, Satan's delivery boy or whatever Ghost Rider... See, I know nothing about Ghost Rider. But after you came back, you'd go, oh, you'd go back and go, of course he turned to Satan at this point in the story. Of course he did, because he's been, yeah, that's his thing.
Well, I just think of, like, the Ghost Rider stories that I've read where he's the spirit of vengeance. He wouldn't drive by someone who just got casually murdered on the street. He would immediately turn around and run those guys down.
How does his penance stare work? I've only seen that referenced in relation to, like, other characters' powers and how they, like, act around that.
You'll have to ask me some other day.
Okay.
I don't know enough about the character. Also, the penance stare, I believe, is kind of inconsistent. I don't know if every iteration of Ghost Rider has it.
I see.
Like, Johnny... There have been at least three different Ghost Riders with comics. Like, there's been more in history, but you've got Johnny Blaze, then you've got Danny Ketch, and now you've got Robbie Reyes. I don't think the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider has the penance stare. And I don't know if Robbie Reyes does. Danny Ketch had it.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And that was the Ghost Rider I grew up with. I grew up reading 90s Ghost Rider.
Okay.
Okay, so we put the first appearance of Ghost Rider pretty low on this list at number 20.
I wanted it higher, but I couldn't. You brought up questions that poked holes, and that's...
Yeah, well, once again, we learned that democracy is the perfect solution by which nobody is satisfied.
Yeah.
I will never be satisfied.
Now that's going to be stuck in my head all weekend.
All right. Amazing Fantasy 15. Spider-Man.
Okay, I think it has to go in the top 10, possibly top 5, but I don't know beyond that.
You know where I want to put it? So I've mentioned in the past that there are stories that I had in mind that I would rank above No Normal. This is one of them.
Oh, really?
It's the quintessential Marvel superhero origin. It's the best one.
I would actually put it below No Normal. But that's because I think No Normal is to 2010s what this was to 1960s.
Yeah. Seeing as we live in the teens now, Ms. Marvel is more relevant for our day.
But I think, and I think while this handles a lot of themes, I don't think a lot of the themes it would come to handle are really in play in here. I think we see a lot of really cool stuff about Spider-Man. We see him kind of evolve as a character in 11 pages, and that's impressive, don't get me wrong. But I think seeing the stuff that Ms. Marvel deals with, whether it being identity and race, something that's not at all touched in here, I think for me that makes it stronger.
Okay.
And this coming from a man who would take a bullet for Spider-Man.
It's a problem I come back to where I see something that, because definitely the Spider-Man origin inspired this, you know, Ms. Marvel origin story.
Oh yeah,
and all origin stories. So it's tough to compare two origins, especially when one is clearly influenced by the other. Yeah. But I'm with Aldo. I think No Normal is still, you know, that is, you know, 5 issues against 11 pages, but I still would feel better with it at number 1.
Okay, so we're not dethroning No Normal this week.
No, but very close. And honestly, if it wasn't for No Normal, I would have put this up at number 1, no contest.
Yeah, this would beat out anything else.
But this was a comic I wish I would have read when I was like 10 or 12. But No Normal is a comic that I absolutely needed when I would have been 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So does that mean we put this at number 2?
Yes.
Okay, I'm fine with that. So, like, we're turning into the Superhuman Registration Podcast featuring Spider-Man, because we have so many Spider-Man stories on this list.
You know, your problem was inviting me to be part of this.
Yeah, I don't see this as a problem. I see it as a wealth of spider material. We haven't even talked about Superior Spider-Man. Wait until we get to Superior Spider-Man. I will gush. I will throw my panties on stage.
Oh, man, just wait till we do our 3-hour episode where we discuss the entirety of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Well, next episode is not going to be that. Although, we are still not getting away from Spider-Man.
Oh, Jesus. So,
which I didn't realize until we were in the middle of recording this episode. So, if you follow movie news, you are probably aware that the Captain Marvel trailer dropped recently. I feel like we should talk about that as our back matter, but I haven't actually seen it. My guess is, John, you haven't seen it either.
I will not see it.
Right.
Squares.
Yeah.
Well, John had this philosophy going into pretty much any movie that he knew he was going to see, but specifically, I think it was the Star Wars movies.
Correct. Episode 7.
Yeah, where he's just like, I'm not going to see the trailer. And I realized that for movies that I knew I was going to see, I should do the same thing. Like, my biggest regret is seeing the trailers for Thor Ragnarok before going to Thor Ragnarok.
Uh-huh.
Because the trailers ruin the best part of the movie.
He's my friend from work, and that was ruined for me before I saw the movie, too.
Neither John nor I have seen the trailer for the Captain Marvel movie, but because Captain Marvel is kind of the big news right now for Marvel Comics, we wanted to read a Captain Marvel comic, and we decided to go with the first appearance of Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel, which happens to be in a Spider-Man story.
It wasn't on purpose.
Nope, we picked it for Captain Marvel, not for Spider-Man.
It all comes back to Spidey.
It all comes back to Spidey. We're going to be reading Avenging Spider-Man, issues 9 and 10, which, again, first appearance of Carol Danvers as Captain Marvel. Very, very excited to read this. I've read a lot of Captain Marvel, but I haven't read this.
To be fair, because I know some people would probably get angry. This was released, I think, on accident, like 2 weeks before the official launch of Captain Marvel, because it reads in that way.
Mm-hmm. We'll get eventually to the Kelly Sue DeConnick Captain Marvel series that launched the character as Captain Marvel. It's great stuff, but we're not there yet. Our second story is going to be the 2015 event comic Secret War.
Wars.
Hold on. Yes, 2015 event comic Secret Wars. You gotta be careful because there's a Secret War, there's Secret Wars, and then there's other Secret Wars, and then there's Secret Wars 2, and then there's Secret Wars. Oh my gosh, there's so many Secret Wars books.
War, what is it good for? Spinoffs.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up then. This happy October. This episode goes up on October 1st. And we will have our next episode go up on October 15th, where we will talk about Avenging Spider-Man and Secret Wars.
Yay.
Hope that you'll join us then. And remember, you are on our list, along with apparently Spider-Man, about a dozen other times.
And don't forget Satan.